You're listening to WWBC, Cocoa, Merritt Island, Melbourne, Titusville, and the Beaches, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Vieira, 94.7 FM, and W264AS, Melbourne, and Palm Bay, 100.7 FM.
Hello, space and treasure coast. This is Sita Biggie on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends right here in sunny Cocoa, Florida. We're on WWBC AM 1510. We can also be heard on FM 94.7, FM 99.9, and FM 100.7. We're also live on the web. Anyone could listen to the on-demand app, I think it is, Pastor Paul. It is an app, you told me, right? You could download the app, or you can just go on the website and hit listen live. And we have an action-packed show today. Every week here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, I should say each week, Ellen and I talk about kitchen table topics and what's going on around the world. And we are very, very grateful to the people that take the time to call into our show or be part of the show and advertise or purchase a segment and come on and talk about their business, their book, whatever it is they want to talk about. And today I have next to me my good friend, Dr. Miriam Moore, who is the Executive Director of the Brevard Homeless Coalition. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Sita. Thanks for having me today.
She's my good friend, and thanks to the show, we actually became friends here on Sita and Friends when you came on, and we realized we both like Moscato wine.
Yes.
Sweet wine. We went to the Cocoa Village Festival, and we didn't really drink but maybe one ounce per place.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, we probably had one glass.
Yeah.
Yeah, we
but
were
it was
really
fun.
We were responsible, and we saw Santa Claus in July.
Shopping was fun,
right? And then we also have, you know, we all talk about civility. We talk about how to save the turtles, save the whales, the environment, public education, the environment, and we all talk, but actually putting the action into it is great, right?
Right.
And so I decided that I was going to have a show today with Dr. Moore, and I was going to invite my friend Brian Lober, who is the county commissioner here in Brevard County for District 2, to come on.
Yes, ma'am.
Welcome.
I also am a fan of Moscato.
Yes. And I was teasing with Brian. Brian was outside in the heat trying to lock the car up and get in. Nice car, by the way.
Thank you.
And I said, don't get your head burned. Because my son-in-law, you know, he has to watch his scalp. It burns.
I have a dermatologist in the family as well. I'll be basically excommunicated from any Thanksgivings or holidays if I show up looking like a lobster.
Yeah, you have to wear a hat. So, you know, Miriam, I was telling you that I saw this woman on CNN who had this very compelling story about having to marry the gentleman who actually raped her at the age of 9 and 10. And she had to marry this man at the age of 11 because, according to her mother, she had, the mother thought that this young child had somehow shamed her. And so, and they arranged a marriage with this woman, Sherry Johnson, to marry the man who impregnated her. And so I looked at the story and then I'm like, are you kidding me? This happened right here in Florida, in the state of Florida, and it happens all over the United States. And then the story went on to say that she went to Tallahassee and became an advocate for marriages, for people not to be married before the age of 17 or 18. And she got that bill passed. And so I reached out to her and her manager, and she's with a group that does public speaking. And so she's supposed to be calling in today. And you said you saw the story as well.
Oh, she is just an amazing example of resiliency. She's very, very strong, amazing woman.
I know. And while we're waiting for her to call in, I just wanted to say to Brian, you know, we watched all the coverage about the Hurricane Dorian, and I was really grateful to you for putting out your Facebook posts and keeping us updated. And it was really good to see public officials doing what they're supposed to do in a time of crisis like that.
No, I appreciate that. It definitely was a spooky storm. I think that I hate to just repeat what everyone else has said, but we've dodged a bullet. I think that's about as true a statement as I can make. And, you know, I can't tell you that anytime we have a little bit of wind, that we'll all be doing the same thing. But anything of that magnitude, I think if folks were one-fifth as worried as I was, it's the least that I could do to try to at least give people the information that they could use to make sure that they kept their loved ones safe and made the appropriate decisions as to stay or go and really how to conduct themselves.
Yes, well, I really appreciated it. And I said, you know, that's what public officials are supposed to be doing when there's a crisis forming, whether it's the hurricane, the storm, or other things. You know, we all saw what happened with our environment with Red Tide.
Oh, yeah.
And people have spoken about that. And then the homeless situation, which we'll be talking a little bit about later. But in the meantime, I think we have our caller, who I am so grateful that Mrs. Sherry Johnson has taken the time to call in and speak with us to increase the awareness about what happened to her and how she was able to be an advocate to change the laws about child marriages. So, Sherry, are you on the phone with us right now?
Yes, I am. How are you?
Well, I tell you, you know, when we were talking about you prior to going on air, we all three of us, we have our county commissioner, Brian Lober, for District 2 here in Brevard with us. We have my good friend, Dr. Miriam Moore, who's the executive director of the Brevard Homeless Coalition. And we are amazed at what you have done and how much your confidence and how you did it. So we want you to tell our audience here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends a little bit about yourself and how you became an advocate to end child marriage here in the state of Florida.
Well, my spirit calls me to, first of all, become a advocate for child marriage. Well, I experienced a lot of devastation in my life very early age, at 8 years old, being raped by the bishop of my mother's church, then by my mother's husband, and then by the deacon of the church, which got pregnant at the age of 9. And I gave birth to my daughter at the age of 10, and then I was forced by the bishop and my mother to marry my rapist at the age of 11. So I was a married woman with a child at 11 years old. And that was devastation to my life, and it happened where I didn't have anyone to really talk to, no advice, no encouragement, you know, anybody could say something nice to me, where I looked at people a lot of times during my walks of life just to hear, you're going to be okay. And that was something that I never could hear from people. And so I say, you know, this journey of a situation for a child is devastation to a child's mind, her life, everything that's about her, it can cause major issues. But I'm so glad that I was able and comfortable enough to get to a point where I can go to legislators and say, listen, you know, there is no doubt about it. We have to change these laws. If we say we are here for our children, we are going to protect our children, we are going to be there for them, and they don't have anyone else but us, so then we need to do what lies in our power, and that's to change the law where no child would be forced into a marriage of something that they never, ever understood as a child. Understand, even if they grow up, but as being a child, they don't understand that.
And Sherry, you know, I looked at that video and it broke my heart. So this, the deacon actually brought a bike over with a big bow on it to fool you. So what? Tell us about that bike and it looked like he was trying to bribe you into silence.
Well, that's what it was, but that was actually the bishop of the church who brought that back, because he knew what he had did was actually wrong. So I apologize.
That's okay. We know that you're a busy woman and that you're taking the time to call in on our show. But Dr. Moore has a question for you too, because we're all amazed at your determination and the self-confidence that you have now from telling your story in public to so many people and inspiring so many of us to remain advocates and just do the best we can to change the laws of whatever we believe in.
Oh, yes, yes.
Go ahead.
Ms. Johnson, I'm just in awe of your strength and your resiliency. And I'm curious to know, what were some of the challenges you faced in addressing these types of issues with your legislators?
The same issues that everybody else that is trying to do the same thing that I'm doing. I looked at the paper the other day, some news, and they were saying how legislators was doing a lot of fight back to keep the law from changing on child marriage. And they give us, you know, thoughts like, what if the child, what if the teenagers are, one is going into the service, and what if they have a child, and that child is going to be born, they don't want to be born out of wedlock. I mean, there are a variety of things that they bring, but there is nothing that can come to the depth of a person actually taking their life and going through the necessities to save someone else to hurt themselves, if I could say it that way.
Yeah.
Because you marry to save that child, but you're damaging yourself. So what's the purpose? What's the real reason? Is it about you being able to? You're a child, too. So you're talking about a child looking out for a child. So who's going to look out for you as being a child? So, and getting married, going into the service, and those issues. And I was at every, in Florida, I was at every legislative session to fight these battles. I had a lot of things coming at me.
It's almost like legalized rape, if you ask me.
Well, that's exactly what it is. But, of course, they're not going to say that.
I mean, it's a piece of paper that gives a grown man the rights to a child. And, I mean, I don't understand. You know, thank you for bringing this out in the open, because even our Commissioner Brian was saying, we're all amazed that we didn't even know about. I mean, we knew about it, but nobody ever heard about it, right?
Yeah, that's absolutely correct.
Right.
I mean, it's horrifying that something like that even is allowed to take place, whether it's by society or the individuals involved. But, you know, just for everyone's benefit again, what was the age difference, if you don't mind?
Age difference is I was 11 and he was 20.
Yeah, that's unbelievable. I mean, God bless you for getting through that, but that is an incredible, incredible difference in age.
Yeah.
Yes. It's awful. Yes.
So how do you so Miss Sherry Johnson, tell all listeners here on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, how does one heal from this? I mean, how do you move on with six children, and then you also you got married afterwards, and I'm sure psychological damages to you and the children and your mother and everyone.
And they was reciting the same cycle of damages was going on over and over. Married twice to abusers, you know, had children and keep having children. I had 9 total. I mean, it was very damaging. Can you imagine trying to have a life with married to an abuser with all the kids? It was devastating, you know. But that's what gave me the unction, the power to say, no, this gonna stop here. The buck stops here. We are not going to allow, legislators, everybody that's in position to be able to change the law, we're not going to just sit here and hold our hands. We got to do something about this to protect our children. Nobody should have to go through this.
Well, you know, what you did inspires so many of us, because a lot of us, we're blessed to have this gift of a voice, a responsible voice, and to use it in such a manner that we could impact public policy and impact our lives and those around us. And I think on this journey, on this wonderful journey of life on earth, we ought to do it if we have that gift. Because I was talking to Brian, and I said, you know, back home, I was born and raised in Trinidad and Tobago. I had no idea that the good Lord would bring me to the United States of America. And here I am, and I am making a difference. And I think it's because I was raised dirt poor with next to nothing. And I have this voice where I can have an impact on people's lives, it's a shame to sit quietly and not use it. So tell us, so Sherry, now if somebody wanted to get a hold of you and hear your story, have you speak at an event, do you have a website? Is there someone we could contact?
Yes, Tour de Force Speakers facebook.com/Sherry Johnson. And you can go there.
Yeah.
And put in for speaking what you need, you know, give us an idea of what you need.
Right. So you wrote the book, and you know, when people come on our show, sometimes we talk about their books, and we know that they want to sell the book. But you know, with you, it's not about selling a book.
It is about
changing the hearts and the minds of people. So yeah. I saw where you, when you first started trying to get the legislators in Tallahassee to listen, I noticed that the first time the bill went into committee and it didn't make it out of the House,
House into the Senate.
So lead us through that process.
Mm-hmm.
So lead us through the process, and this was not a Democrat or Republican issue. Actually, the person that listened to you and was able to get it passed was a Republican, which I think is awesome too.
Yes, yes, it really was, and I tell you, they were real well with me when I did get the right people on board.
So what happened the first time? Because it was, and then it got tabled. So tell our listeners what happened to that bill the first time.
Well, the first time it actually passed unanimously in the House, and then when it went to the Senate, it failed, and it failed in Children and Family of all places. You would think in Children and Family, let's protect our children, right? But it didn't. It failed. All that did was build more work for me to say I'm coming back. It built my
resolve,
my energy level to, you know, let's get ready to fight this even more.
Well, I think you just said let's get ready to rumble, and you went back again.
So how did you approach it? How did you approach it differently the second time around? Was there a different strategy when you went about it, or what was it that you changed?
Yes, I learned the people, because when I went the first time, nobody believed me. Nobody said, they said that did not happen in the state of Florida.
That's terrible.
Yes, they said it can't happen was the next thing. It cannot happen. The age limit is 18. And it's like any other fine print contract. If you don't read the fine print, you get caught up in other things that you have no idea. Well, yes, the state of Florida do say 18 for marriage. But it does not let you know until you read the fine print that if you're pregnant and the judge gives consent, then it's okay. Then you can get married.
Well, let me jump in for a sec. As far as the judge giving consent, what was that process like, if you don't mind me asking? Because that to me would seem to be a huge uphill battle to convince a judge that a 10 or an 11-year-old should be married to a 20-year-old, regardless of the circumstances.
Right. Well, in the city that this all happened to me in, I had to actually leave from Tampa and go over to St. Petersburg with my mom taking me there, because the judge in Tampa refused to do the marriage.
Oh.
He said, it won't happen here. So he didn't do it. So he told my mother she has to go to another city or state to have it done. Well, she went home, did her homework, I suppose, and she found out they would do it in Clearwater. She transported me over to Clearwater, and that's what happened.
Did it ever come up in Pinellas County that the judge out in Hillsborough refused to do it?
I'm pretty sure they know. That's why we was over there. I was so young, I don't recall whether she said anything or not, but I believe that's would be a question that the judge would ask.
Wow.
In the process, only thing we had to do was write a letter, and hey, my little 11-year-old signature was on the bottom of that letter saying that
you know, what's sad about your story, you know, the tragic thing about your story too is that your mother made the wedding dress, the people in the church knew about this wedding. Nobody cared about you, a child not being in school and getting an education. And I know Dr. Moy is shaking her head. You have another we have so many questions for you, because as women, you know, and men and people of today in this modern world, We just can't believe, we can't wrap our head around that something like this would happen.
In the process of this, I mean, you went through from a very young age, there were a lot of people in your life who wronged you, who made very bad decisions for your life. And that has got to be a difficult process to work through for yourself. And I'm just wondering, between the legal people who didn't help you, your family, the church, the people in the community, just all along your whole lifeline where you were dealing with all these issues, how did you forgive people, or were you able to forgive people?
Well, to answer that question, that what caused me to write my book called Forgiving the Unforgivable, because I had to forgive them. Because I would have been consumed with the anger and the bitterness myself if I didn't realize that I needed to forgive them, and my process was able to be free, where I can live and survive.
It's almost like there was multiple systems failure when it came to Sherry Johnson's life.
It was.
And how did you come up with the name Destiny?
Yes, that was me, because I knew I had a destiny for my life.
Yeah.
I didn't go through what I went through just to go through it. I knew it was a destiny, or something else had to go beyond. I had to go beyond what was actually happening at that time.
So how does the children feel about you writing the story, and your friends and family? I mean, this is powerful stuff. You changed the laws in the state of Florida. Congratulations, and thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. My children is happy about what's taking place in my life right now, most of them anyway. My oldest daughter, she have a little problem issue with me, but my most part of my children, they happy with me in my life, that I was not consumed. In other words, you know, I'm still a mother. I have beautiful, beautiful children. But they doesn't, they don't talk about it a whole lot. They know what I've been through, and they realize what I've been through. So they don't want to, I guess, emphasize it much more or give much energy towards what I've already faced.
Well, I think there's some sort of, I think for families sometimes when someone breaks loose to tell a story, it is brave and it's a lot of determination. But I think sometimes there's a little bit of a stigma and shame around it, because I know when I wrote my book, 18 Brothers and Sisters, and I spoke about domestic violence in our family, a lot of my sisters and brothers would have preferred me not to speak about it. But it was my story to tell from my viewpoint, and I did get a lot of backlash. But at the same time, I thought it was very important not to sweep domestic violence under the rug, because it had was happening to so many people.
Exactly.
That I know. And I think you do have to speak out, but you just have to remember that, to sit down with the family members that are not happy about the topic and say, this is why I wrote it. And I think it's about communication and telling them why you did it, the purpose of writing the book.
Yes, I mean, agree with that.
I totally agree with that. The whole story, it's so horrifying. You wouldn't think, just without hearing it from someone, that something like that would occur in the U.S. I mean, it's something that you'd think, okay, that's I'm sure it would occur somewhere at some point in time in history, but for that to occur in modern day in the United States, in a place that we consider a highly civilized society, you know, it's just amazing to me. But as Sita was saying, you know, you deserve incredible kudos for taking a horrible negative experience and turning it into something that's positive, where you really took the bad and then basically bundled your energy up and went forward and accomplished something pretty impressive, very impressive.
And she knocked on every single door of the senators the House of Representatives. The children, in my humble opinion, if they would like, I would cook them a meal and invite them over and give each of them a medal, and you, and say thank you. Because, you know, of so many of us, it's easy to type on Facebook. It's easy to write a letter.
Right.
But it's hard work to get into the nitty-gritty of going to Tallahassee and do what it takes. You have done more than most politicians have done in their lifetime.
Yes, ma'am. And not only in Florida, we've also passed a law in Georgia and Louisiana.
Mm. Wow. So Sherry, you're making people stand up. And you know, the reason why your case, your story was so compelling, look what it has. It has so many issues that we face on a daily basis. It's talking about rape, it's talking about the Me Too movement, it's talking you know, pregnancy, abortion, not to abort, education, it's talking about generational poverty, it's talking about the church and the trust that's broken between children and elders. So, I mean, your story, my God, I can't wait for the movie to come out. There's going to be a movie about this, and we're going to have to come there and be right there with you. We love you. And I know we have one minute left, and Dr. Moore would like to say something to you and Brian Lober from the County Commission here in District. We thank you for calling in on Viewpoint with Seed and Friends, and I think Dr. Moore is going to say something to you, and then we'll go to commercial break. So thank you again.
Yes, Ms. Johnson, I am just so thrilled that you were able to speak with us today and share your story. You are truly an amazing woman. I want to thank you. It's heartbreaking, but it's a story that needed to be heard. You managed to turn your life around and raise your family, and this had to be through a lot of hard work and determination. You've been a voice for a lot of people.
You're my hero. That's it.
Yep. And I want to thank you for getting these laws changed, not just in Florida, but in other states as well.
Yes, I'm going across the nation.
Getting ready
to fly to New York City. I'll be on Tamron Hall Talk Show.
Well, thank you so much for calling in. And my dear listeners on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends, we'll be right back after a few words from our sponsors.
Okay.
Ms. Cheryl Johnson, thank you for calling. I will keep up with you on Facebook Messenger and through Lisa. Thank you.
Sure.
All right. Bye-bye.
Portions of Viewpoint with Sita and Friends is sponsored by the friends and family of Sita Begee, author of 18 Brothers and Sisters, and founder of Simply Sita Skincare, and these great sponsors. Portions of Sita and Friends is brought to you by Cloud9 Mattress and Furniture Store inside the Merritt Square Mall at the Sears Wing. Save big on furniture working with a flexible family-owned store with all the brands you love, from Ashley, Serta, Coaster, and so and more. Brand new, warranties as well, and delivery and haul-away available at a fraction of the cost of most stores and delivered in 7 to 10 days. Free, no-credit checking and financing, and free interior design. The owner, Scott Palmer, has been in the mattress and furniture business for over 30 years, and Cloud9 has been serving Central Florida for 7 years now. Cloud9 Mattress and Furniture Store, available at 321-459-2473. Again, call them 321-459-2473 or visit them on the web at cloud9furniture.com. When you need medical care and need it fast, MedFast Urgent Care is faster and less expensive than emergency rooms. MedFast is open 7 days a week, now with 8 locations serving Brevard County. So if you have an emergency, need a physical, or when your doctor is unavailable, with 8 locations, MedFast offers top quality care that is close by, and the number is easy to remember. That is 321-MEDFAST. You just call 321-MEDFAST. No one wants to wait in an emergency room for hours and get even sicker when you get the high bill. What you want is medical care fast. That's why you call MedFast, where most patients are seen and treated in less than an hour. MedFast Urgent Care opens 7 days a week with the convenience of 8 locations serving Brevard County. So when you need medical care fast, call 321-MEDFAST. MedFast. Located in Titusville, Florida, Dixie Crossroads has been serving great tasting seafood, char-grilled steaks, prime rib, chicken, fresh salads, and their famous corn fritters for over 31 years. The menu features the very best local shrimp and fish from Port Canaveral, and ranges from low-cost sandwiches and baskets to high-end seafood combos. Visit this Florida favorite at 1475 Garden Street in Titusville. That's Dixie Crossroads, 321-268-5000. 321-268-5000. or visit them on the web at dixiecrossroads.com. Jotkoff Financial Group is a certified public accounting and a registered investment advisory firm with over 30 years of productive relationships with clients. Jotkoff Financial Group can assist you in meeting your accounting, tax, and business consulting and financial planning and insurance needs without expanding your internal workforce. With three locations here in Florida, here in Brevard County, Broward County, and Nassau County, contact Jotkoff Financial Group here in Brevard at 321-984-7345, located at 1122 South Wickham Road in Melbourne. That's Jotkoff Financial Group. On the web, you'll find them at www.jotkoff, that's JOTKOFF.com. Call the professionals at Jotkoff Financial Group today.
Welcome back, dear listeners. This is Sita Begee on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. And boy, what an emotional first segment we had with Sherry Johnson, author, public speaker. My God, she was on TED Talks, which is pretty good, about being forced to marry the gentleman who violated her little body at the age of 9 and 10 and impregnated her. And then having the gumption to go to Tallahassee and knock on the doors and get the laws changed here in the state of Florida towards child marriage. Kudos to her, right? Just awesome story. Amazing. You know, when I hear stories like that, I think we're talking about, you know, maybe remote villages in India or Indonesia, or even like in my own family, we had, you know, arranged marriages when long ago when people were young. But I've never heard of someone getting married at that age, 11. I've heard about 15, 16. You know, but never 11 years old. But anyways, so Dr. Moore is here. But before we go on to our second segment, my friends from Space Coast Pride would love it if a lot of people turn out for the festival and the parade on September 28th right here in Brevard County, Florida. The event is going to be held on September 28th, 2019 from 1 p.m. until 7 p.m. at the O'Galley Square right in here in Melbourne, Florida. They've got 160 vendor booths, food vendors, which I am going for to be part of the celebration and to buy some food. It is a free event. There's live entertainment. And, you know, at the end of the day, everybody is looking for love and everybody's looking for acceptance. And they all have to pay for food, water, and shelter. So why not get involved, right?
Yes.
And you're getting a table there, you said?
I need to call them and get my table, yes.
Yeah, I think, and the tables are not expensive at all.
No.
I mean, for the kind of fun you get and marketing and talking to the public, it's nice. I went last year in my uniform because I was running for office, and you know how that is. You have to go a little bit, right?
Oh, yeah.
And smooth.
Unfortunately, I know a little bit about that.
So, but anyways, I hope everybody turns out to help him. And my friend Pat Jotkoff is also involved with that, which I think is terrific. So to segue a little bit, I don't know what's a good segue except to say, wow. What a show today, right?
Yeah.
So Brian, you're here,
and we
you know, I don't know if you know, people follow me on Facebook. I just put up a bunch of stuff on Facebook, and someone said you get more action on your Facebook than the Florida Today.
Oh, Facebook is a dangerous thing, but I agree with you. You know, there's a lot of benefit to be had, you know, by way of inviting a bunch of different opinions. You will get positive, you will get negative, and you will get everything in between the two on Facebook. So it's interesting. It's a good platform.
But you know what I don't like? I mean, it is free, right? And everything that's free comes with a responsibility. Facebook reserves that right if they want to delete your account or they want to suspend it or whatever, sure. Right? But what I don't like is all of a sudden now, all these screenshotting. And I'm like, even from here to Trinidad, it's like everybody. So when you screenshot something, you're not really getting the actual conversation.
Right.
You're just getting that one comment. And then it's like kind of scary in a way, you know, because I have to be careful too, you know, having the show and everything. But anyways, so that's a new thing that I think we all have to be careful, because freedom of speech does come with a responsibility, and people are taking our speech and they're taking things and turning it around and upside down.
I think that's the important part there. It's not that people can't screenshot or post whatever they'd like to, by and large. It's that they really do have an ethical, not a legal responsibility necessarily, but an ethical responsibility to make sure that the context is there. I've seen, you know, used for people, against people, comments that are taken where you know just by looking at them that there was something that precipitated that comment. There was something that caused that to be put in place. And you're left wondering, well, what was it? And the problem is, you or I may be that skeptical, and we may say, okay, well, there was definitely something, or almost certainly there was something prior to that. But there are people that just view it and assume that in isolation, that's all there was. And I'll give you an example. Maybe it's an extreme analogy, but you know, I would ask you, is it ever okay to push a dog, to shove a dog?
Right.
And most people would say, no, it's never okay to shove a dog. But let me ask you, if your dog's walking toward a cliff or toward something that's on fire.
Or if he bit somebody.
Right. Or yeah. if he's in the process of eating a little child. You know, there's sometimes when something that in isolation would look reprehensible isn't necessarily wrong. So, you know, as an attorney, I've dealt with all sorts of interesting things in the courtroom. And there are times where you have meth as evidence. And you could ask someone, well, is it ever appropriate to handle meth or cocaine? And most people would say no, but, well, what about the police that are collecting it or the attorneys that are dealing with it in trial as evidence? I mean, there are things that sound reprehensible just on their face. If you take them in little bite-sized pieces, you can really twist them to make someone look better or worse based upon how you end
right,
up
that's why,
that.
You know, there's a saying. My mother always said there's two sides to every story, sometimes three sides. And
or more.
And also, that's when it says, listen to the big picture here from all sides. This is why I think it's so important, you know, for all of us to understand that, you know, at some point we must dial back, you know, hateful rhetoric or spiteful speech and sit down and talk.
Right.
I mean, you can find out so much about people when you talk with them instead of at them or around them. You know, Brian and I have known each other for a long time. And what I see in him is a person who wanted to run for office, and he did, and he got elected, and he's doing the best he can. And granted, we've had spiritual conversations as well.
Sure,
I sent him my guru from India. I said, you got to watch this. But Dr. Moore, I don't know if you know, I don't want to disrespect you, Miriam, it's fine. You've had that too, and I know you understand what I'm saying.
Yeah.
People have to be careful what they're saying about others.
Words matter. They
right.
really do. Words matter. And being civil is and in many cases, it's an art, really, to be able to disagree with somebody, and not just disagree, but be willing to sit down with that person and discuss the issue and say, this is why I disagree, but I still respect your opinion.
Well, it's not, and sometimes it's how people come at you, too. I had a friend who's a politician here in Brevard, and he told me, you know, I would sit down with people and I would speak with them. But when they're hateful and spiteful and they come to me like, you know, they want to get me. It's like a gotcha moment. I can't do it.
Right.
And I ran for office myself. And I know for a fact there were times when people would send me, you know, hateful messages or things that I said. And I would be like, I'm just doing the best I can.
Right.
But if you come at me in a way where I could sit down with you and talk about it, you might understand what part of my soul that was coming from.
But here's the thing, Sita. When you look at that, you've really got to consider where that message is coming from, because you and I may be perfectly happy to sit down with one another or with other folks and have a civil conversation with them and engage in something that at least has the potential to be productive dialogue. But you get folks, and I'm not going to say one side of the aisle or the other, because truth be told, it's both. You get folks on both sides of the aisle that are perhaps too far to the left, too far to the right, whatever the case may be. They're not interested in having civil dialogue necessarily. They're interested in exactly what you said, the gotcha, I gotcha moment.
Well, it's too much of the extreme on the right and on the left at times, and the
100%.
Middle gets drowned. And the middle get accused of all these things, and sometimes you're like, you know what, just leave me alone, right? But I, you know, when I was a little girl back home, there was a very wealthy man. And he would come to our temple and at the end of the service would give everybody a quarter. And sometimes I would line up twice because I wanted two quarters. And, you know, when things like that happen, you learn. You learn from things like that. And I said, gee, one day when I grow up, I want to be able to do this for people and give them a quarter, because that quarter meant a soda for me, it meant a pack of what we call corn curls, which what you guys call Cheetos. It meant having extra to buy something at school. It meant a lot, you know. And so I do think that our actions speak louder than our words at times. And you're not sure who you're influencing sometime when you see things like that.
You're right. You're absolutely right. I mean, the problem is that I think media on both sides, and even down the middle to a degree, they're dependent upon a degree of sensationalism in order to really promote their product. And folks that are moderate, that are anywhere near willing to compromise with another, they're not generally newsworthy. So unfortunately, you get the most media attention for the folks that are on the extreme ends of both sides. And it's unhealthy. It's not something that's generally productive for society. But the reward mechanism is there for people to say crazy things on both sides.
Right. It's almost like, you know, when you go to a wedding, most people want to go to the reception. Sometimes I do too, because I want to dance and dress up. But they actually, at the wedding itself, or even at a funeral, right, the priest is there for a reason, to talk to us about the person who passed away, or even who's getting married, about life and what life is about. Why are you getting married? What are you going to say nice about this person? What are you going to learn? And I think that's what we need in society nowadays, is somebody to just bring us all together. And we can do that ourselves at the local level. It doesn't have to be national level. We can do that on a local level too, and start listening to each other instead of just going to the party.
Here's the thing though, you if you're looking to put something like that together, you would need someone who's got enough credibility with both sides to make it happen. You know, and I'm not trying to inflate ego by any means here, but you could potentially pull something like that.
You mean
off
with my curry chicken and my rice?
I think you could.
I can
do it.
And a little salad and
why
a
not?
And
absolutely
a veggie food. Yes,
absolutely.
So Dr. Moore, you're here, and you and I have talked extensively about how to help humanity, how to help people, how we're using our life experience to do good for others, and everything comes through education and awareness, right? And you're with the you're the executive director for the Brevard Homeless Coalition. What is happening right now in Brevard? Because I just read in the paper where there's so much stuff happening in Palm Bay with the people living in the woods. So tell us a little bit about how, bring us up to speed on what's going on with the Brevard Homeless Coalition.
There are a number of agencies that are working with the city on like a task force to address issues in Palm Bay. And we're all working together, the police department, the fire department, the city, the providers, and they really want to make a difference down there. The issues we experience with homelessness is not, you know, exclusive to Palm Bay. This is happening all over the county, but it's easier to address the issues when you have the officials that are willing to come to the table with the providers and discuss how we can,
again,
you know,
that word discussion.
You've got to take a multidisciplinary approach to problem solving when it comes to things like homelessness, because homelessness is like a kind of a catch-all phrase for everything. I mean, you there's a lot of reasons why people can become homeless, I should say, and they all have to be addressed in order to successfully rehouse somebody and keep them housed. And you can't just put a roof over their head and expect them to thrive. They need case management. They need people around them. They need
a
community.
Job.
They need employment. Yeah. They need people to help them. They need agencies that specialize in this type of thing to help them. So we do work with city and government officials to address the things that are, you know, really specific to their communities, because they're all different. Every city in Brevard is a little bit different. The one thing that we find that's pretty much the same throughout Brevard is our lack of affordable housing. And that becomes a problem when you want to put everybody in a home, you want to use a housing first model, and you want to be able to find ways to, you know, get that case management to them, but you don't have places that are affordable.
I see Brian's nodding his head. You want to jump in here?
Yeah, no, I know we've had this, I don't want to say tiny house, but small house initiative that's been coming up over the recent past here. And I think that's great. You know, obviously there are codes and there are ordinances in place in the various municipalities and even the county itself that deal oftentimes with square footage minimums dependent upon the location that you're looking at. But I think some flexibility by the officials at whatever level of government it may be is really useful for something like this. And it's also important to look at not just the long-term needs, but the short-term needs as well. And it could be something as straightforward as our hurricane issue that we had recently, where if you're homeless and you have a storm that's coming in with sustained 185 with gusts over 200 miles an hour, that's not going to work. Right. I can tell you it's great.
Yeah, you have to look at everything.
Yeah, it's...
You know what? That sounds like a friend of mine. We were talking about these small houses, and she says, it makes me think of that story with the wolf when he says, I'll huff and I'll puff and I'll blow your house up. She says, every time I think about those tiny houses, I'm like, why do you think about the wolf? She goes, because I feel like they're going to blow away with a wind. You're absolutely correct. You have to think about that.
But you know what? The size of the house, I don't know, has a tremendous correlation between the... I don't know if there's a tremendous correlation between the size and the structural integrity. You can have stick frame, you can have concrete block, you can have poured concrete, you can have any of the types of construction that are pretty common around here in a house that's 10,000 square feet or 400 square feet.
We'll still get damage.
Yeah, you have 185 miles an hour, it's going to be a problem regardless of what you're in. I mean, even the EOC bunker in Rockledge, which isn't terribly far from us, that's not rated to take an unlimited amount of wind. There's a limit at a certain point, and the longer you have sustained wind that's that high, the more likely you're going to have major structural issues. And as soon as you have one penetration in a structure, it's all downhill from there.
Well, you know what, the homeless situation too, like you say, it's an approach from all sides, education and awareness, right? And how many times we talk about things like comprehensive sex education at an appropriate age, as well as academic and trade. And then this morning, somebody sent me something. They said, since you're talking about that on your radio show, how about addressing this as well? When when students leave high school, how about classes that should be mandatory in high school? I know, Brian, you're going to love this. Accounting, money management, taxing, building and keeping good credit, picking the right career, nutrition, self-defense, time management, self-confidence, anti-bullying.
Critical life skills.
I know. Yeah. And so where have we failed in some instances? A lot of people are one paycheck away. Mm-hmm. And some of them did not have someone to teach them a lot of these things. I mean, people don't become homeless because they want to.
No.
Some people are homeless living in their cars. They're living in their houses and they're still considered homeless because they're one paycheck away.
Well, rising cost of rent is,
yes,
is a contributing factor to that for our community of people who rent. When they go up, I mean, they could go $300, $400 a month, you get a 30-day notice, and I don't know a whole lot of people that can afford an additional $300 or $400 a month, you know, with long-term.
Right.
You know, a lot of people will max out their credit cards trying to extend that time.
Just to live, just to survive.
Yeah, it runs out eventually.
You know, I'll tell you, I mean, I'm a product of Florida public schools through high school. My wife is as well, and I can tell you from my experience, the closest that we had was a class called something like food science, which was basically home economics.
Yeah.
You know, I had calc and differential equations and all that. I don't use calc. I don't use differential equations now. The items that you talked about, on the other hand, those are things that come in play every single day.
Yes.
You know, algebra, great. Geometry, great. But anything more advanced than that in math... you know, the question is, do you get as much return on your dollars, educational investment on something like that, than you would on the classes that you're talking about? I don't know the answer. I think if you're preparing someone for college, then perhaps yes, because it's necessary to go on. But if someone's looking at going into a vocational program or just working right off the bat, I don't know that that's the best way for them to gear themselves. I don't know that having calc is going to gear you as well for being in the workforce
right
out of high school.
I mean, life skills. I mean, teach people like... You know, like my husband, like yesterday we were having this discussion, you know, we're looking at all the people who are watching the game in the game with the New Orleans Saints, I think, and the Raiders. And he says, just imagine how much money the people make, you know, off of the sports, the NFL. And I said, and I wonder how many are registered to vote, you know, so we're like two different people. But he was saying, you know, when you think about it, a lot of those people, you know, a lot of people, they have the beer, they have the wine, they have their friends, and they go out there, and then they come home, and a lot of them don't even know how to pay a mortgage or rent or whatever it is. Are we really teaching people to drink and have fun, or are we really teaching them to live, mm-hmm. how to pay a mortgage, how to balance a checkbook, how to be careful with your credit, that you could buy coffee from Starbucks or you could buy a big coffee from Walmart or wherever you want to shop, Publix, wherever, and make coffee at home and save money that way. What are we doing wrong that so many people are one paycheck away?
I think part of it goes to really asking yourself, who has the responsibility for ensuring that people are taught these life skills when they're growing up? Is it the parents? Is it the school system? Is it society as a whole, or is it some combination? I mean, that really gears how you go about trying to resolve that. It's never going to be fully resolved. There's simply no way. You have enough people, you're going to have people that aren't going to pick up the skills, even if they're fed to them on a platter. But that said, I think it's appropriate for the school system to look at that. I think that that's one of those things that's so critical in having someone be a productive member of society, that it just doesn't make sense. There's not, you know, even a single class on life skills, and they could even call it something along those lines. I think with the electives that they have and everything from, I don't want to say underwater basket weaving, but, you know, they have so many different electives. I don't think taking one of those classes and making it required on either your 11th or 12th grade year would be a horrible thing. Yeah. I think it would be useful.
Right. So Dr. Moore, what do you hear the most when you see people who are homeless? Because I know for us, it was always like, you know, if someone gets married and they have a child, that's a complication. Because now you need a second bedroom, you have to have food for that person, yourself, whatever.
A bigger car.
Yeah. I mean, what are you seeing the most when people, they just walk away, they can't pay anymore?
With the families?
Yes.
With the individuals, with the youth? Because we have a number of different groups,
yeah,
subpopulations of homeless. With the families, we see a lot of them living in their cars. Or the campgrounds. Those are the big places right now. They stay in the car. There's, you know, different parking lots where they may congregate. And some communities will even tell me, you know, hey, the police check on them. They're okay. They're safe. I'm like, no, they're not. They're in a car in a parking lot. That's not safe, and that's not.
And that's all they've
okay.
got. It's very yeah. sad yeah. in America today that's all some people have mm-hmm. is the car.
Right. And it's hard even to locate some of these people to get them connected with services because they're not during the day. They're not there during the day.
They probably don't have a phone.
They're working. Their kids are in school. So if the schools can identify those children, and they can't always, but if the schools can identify them, then sometimes we can get them connected to services. But a lot of times, that's a stigma that a family doesn't want people to know about. So they try to keep that hidden. So sometimes it's hard to identify people.
Yeah. And Brian, you know, we all saw this case recently where the hot meal was taken away from the child. That just broke my heart. I mean, here, you know, here you're already, you know, and we have so many people in our nation here in Brevard, in the state of Florida, you know, who, I mean, how do you live on $10 to $15 an hour? You have to pay rent, car payment, insurance, you know, your lights, water, telephone. I mean, you don't even at this point have cable TV or cell phone, some people. They're just trying to survive. Mm-hmm. And then you go and you take away the food from in front of a child. Did you see that story?
Unfortunately, I did. I just to go back to the other point, though, you know, $10 an hour, I think there's a reason they call it minimum wage when you get to a certain point, not, you know, not a healthy wage. And the fact is, you've really, when you're in a position like that, you've got to either figure out how to get yourself out of it, or alternatively, figure out real quick how to cut your expenses, and whether that's sharing rent or sharing different costs. It's not a great situation to be in. I think, you know, everyone is a kid that worked at a grocery store or earned minimum wage. I worked little stuff when I was a kid earning next to nothing, but that's, you know, it's part of growing up, and you had that as fun money, or well, a lot of us had it as fun money. But people that are trying to live on minimum wage, whether it's here or elsewhere, it's tough. I don't think there's a good answer for it. And, you know, no one's going to live in a mansion when they're making 10 bucks an hour. It's not going to happen. But, you know, the trick is trying to bring yourself up either by increasing your skills or by moving forward wherever it is that you are in whatever industry it might be, or even going back to school. And I know that sounds tough, but there are a lot of people. I mean, even the caller that you had earlier, I mean, that is a heck of a situation to get oneself through. I mean, if she can get through that, I got to tell you, I mean, it makes me feel much lazier than I otherwise might. Because if you can overcome that, or anyone can overcome that, I think it shows that people are really resilient in what they can manage. And, you know, putting yourself through even getting an associate's degree, it really increases your earning potential substantially. So I'm not saying everyone needs...
Or vocation, or trade.
Or, yeah, or vocational trade,
or like my
trade,
dad
absolutely.
Used to say, you know, somebody in the village will come and say, you know, I have a son and he's turning 18 and he wants to get married. And my dad would say, well, I know this gentleman who has... electrical supply store, and he
oh,
does
100%.
And he's an electrician, and I'll ask him if he can take on an apprentice.
There's absolutely nothing right? wrong with that. That's an honorable profession. It's a necessary profession. It's
or plumbing, whatever
yeah.
it is, right?
Yeah, that's.
Two
I mean, it's,
my children are truck drivers. And
yeah,
they make good money.
Yeah, I mean, they're always going to be needed. I don't see that going by the wayside anytime soon. You know, it's something that's an honest, decent living where you can make good money. I don't think there's anything wrong with
that. So I think it always comes down, and I think, Miriam, you and I had talked about this before, too. I mean, it always comes down to guidance. It comes down to education. It comes down to awareness. And those in the community that are willing
to actually sit down and teach. I mean, a lot of people make it in some communities and they don't come back. You should come back and be a mentor, and you should come back and you should talk and run for office and whatever it takes, do whatever it takes to uplift that community. You know, we always hear about the public schools when they're failing, but we don't hear who's going to put money, time, and energy into the communities to fix them, right, to fix the public schools.
You know, people oftentimes when things are going well, they just forget to give back. And I think that's part of it. And it's not that everyone has to run for elected office, but you can do so many different things to benefit your community. One of the things that I started doing years back was volunteering for legal aid. There are a lot of folks that have injunction issues where someone's beaten them, or someone's done something horrible to them, or where they're stalking them legitimately. I don't mean that they're a little sensitive because they saw someone twice in the span of 2 years. And these folks need help, and it really doesn't take that much time in the scheme of life to stop and help some of these folks out. It's not every single person every single time, but just to give it a shot when you're free and able to do so. And if you don't make the time, you're never going to be able to do that. So the trick is, I don't care what someone's got going on, you can make a little bit of time to do something to benefit your community, whatever it is that's of interest to you.
Well, I'm grateful you made the time to come on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends today, Brian Loeber, County Commissioner, District 2, because, you know, not everyone takes the time when they're elected into office to meet with the folks, right? And so, Miriam, what can we do to help you with the Brevard Homeless Coalition? Do you need volunteers? I know you partner up with a lot of businesses. So tell our listeners the website and how we can help you.
Well, our website, Brevard Homeless Coalition, is finally back up and running. The only portion we don't have complete yet are we haven't been able to upload all the individual provider agencies to the website like we used to have. But we have a lot of providers all throughout the county, all the sharing centers, the Daily Bread, the Family Promise of Brevard, the VOA. All these agencies are there to assist people. But we want to encourage people, if they need to get help, to contact 211 first, because that really is the connecting point. They're not a service agency, or they're a service referral agency. They're not like a service provider, but they will give you the referrals and get you connected with people. They will work with you for diversion.
They will listen,
yes, and try to get you to those services and get you the help that you need. So we actually, I just want to mention, we have our National Homeless Day of Remembrance coming up in December. It's going to be on the 21st, and we're going to hold our services at least two locations in Brevard County, one being Daily Bread and the other one being the Harry T. Moore Center up in Titusville. And that will be at 1:30 in the afternoon on December 21st.
And we'll have Ellen put it on our website. Now, if Kim Kardashian could make a difference and Alyssa Milano could sit down with Ted Cruz, I think everybody in Brevard and around the nation should sit down, reach out and talk and communicate and use the senses that the good Lord gave us. What a great show on Viewpoint with Sita and Friends. We thank Sherry Johnson for calling in. We also thank my good friend Brian Loeber for calling in.
Thanks for calling in,
for being here. You're not calling in, but you could call in
sometime too. Yeah.
And we thank Miriam Moore, Dr. Moore. Brian, you know, thank you for being on the County Commission and for being a voice of reason at times as well.
I appreciate it. And, you know, we've talked about it before, but so many of the issues are non-political. I don't care what anyone's political affiliation is. Just reach out if there's a problem. And that goes for everyone.
That was a great show.
This is the Christian Voice of Brevard on WWBC 1510 AM.
And you're listening to WWBC, Cocoa, Merritt Island, Melbourne, Titusville and the Beaches, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Rockledge, Merritt Island, FM 94.7. You're listening to WWBC, Cocoa, Melbourne, Titusville, 1510 AM, as well as W234BI, Cocoa, Rockledge, and W264AS, Rockledge, Melbourne, and Palm Bay, 100.7 FM.